we welcome you all to a Roll to Cast RPG podcast in the world of Cyberpunk 2020 by Mike Pondsmith, starring Ellen Graham as Cassie Glass, Sean Flerl as Junk, and Christopher Bond as Uncle Bob. Story, refereeing, and additional rules by Phil Harker-Smith. Design by Jack Sumner. Music by Paul Goodman. This is Going Mainstream.
Welcome to episode zero of Cyberpunk 2020, Going Mainstream. I am the referee. I'm Phil, and with me is
Ellen,
playing
as Cassie Glass,
and
I'm Chris. I'm playing Uncle Bob.
Nice.
And I'm Sean, and I'm playing Junk.
Okay, Ellen, what can you tell us also what career your characters
career.
Have as well?
I'm a rocker. Rocker nice. Girl, rocker boy, whatever you want to call it. Just a rocker in general.
Yeah, nice. Yeah. So we can be gender neutral.
I think we should.
In the future. Yeah, just rockers.
Yeah.
I don't see gender, so.
No, it's very nice of you.
So Uncle Bob is a media man.
Nice.
He is a media career path.
And Mr. Junk, or just Junk, is...
Just Junk to you.
Just Junk to you, thank you very much.
Mr. Junk was my father.
To your friends.
Junk Senior.
Yeah, friends right. Call me Junk.
Is a fixer. Mr. Fixer-Man.
Nice. As I said before, I'm the referee of the game. I've come up with a campaign, and so it's a custom campaign set in Night City, which is one of the core locations in the Cyberpunk 2020 lore. So I guess I'll start with a little bit about Cyberpunk itself as a genre. I'll have a quick chat about that and what it means to us.
Mm-hmm.
I'll kick that off with myself. I guess my favorite cyberpunk bits of media are Blade Runner,
yep.
Both the 80s film and the more recent one with Ryan Gosling. And in games, I would have to say it's got to be the Deus Ex series, particularly the modern ones, all about transhumanism and the potential of humankind. That's one of the things that really appeals to me about cyberpunk is the potential for what humans can be. And the other aspect I really like is the division between the haves and haves not, because I feel it's basically an extrapolation of the world we live in today.
Oh. Wasn't any different in the 80s.
Yeah, that's right. It doesn't
it's
feel much different.
Same problem now.
Ellen, what's your kind of favorite bit of cyberpunk media?
Ooh, that's a good one. I mean, you've already said Blade Runner.
You can say it too.
We'll all say Blade Runner.
I mean, obviously Blade Runner. I feel like it has a bit of icky dynamics that yeah. it's not quite dealt with, which I feel is right for like the world of cyberpunk. It is very like, if you imagine Ronald Reagan's 80s America, that's the place that this like awful, this rebel, it's a really gritty world with yeah. not a lot of hope in it, which is kind of reflecting of the time and I think where we are now. So I'm really interested in the socio-political themes. My favorite cyberpunk medium is probably Concept Album by My Chemical Romance. It's actually set in 2019, the year we are now. And it's called The True Lives of the Fabulous Killjoys. And it is very, it's got the Mad Max influence. It's got, you know, wasteland in the desert. It's also got a big youth culture, which I think is really important
yeah.
for 80s cyberpunk. You know, it's a whole thing of the kids are now trying to take back what little control they've got yet left. And like, this isn't a world for old people. The older generation has kind of fucked it. Now yeah. we're taking back in the way that we can, and it's very stylish over substance. And there's also a really cool supplementary thing for that where they take where those characters have been and they take a little bit in the future, and that's a comic book. It's also called True Lives of the Fabulous Killjoys. I very much recommend.
That's
cool.
Gerard Way, isn't it?
It is Gerard Way. He's a yeah. really good comic book artist, and there's some really good themes about the main thing that I'm really jazzed about for cyberpunk is ownership of the body. Yeah. When we start trading out parts, and also especially since the world is now owned by corpse, it's a bit hard to feel like the corpse also don't own our bodies. We're kind of renting out parts as well.
So we will get to characters a bit more detail in the future as a bit further down the line. But Cassie, your character, she had a hand mutilated, right?
Yeah.
And she replaced that.
Yeah.
And so that trading out a body part also represents a kind of a point of personal history.
Yeah,
as
a turning
well.
Point for her and a reminder of her trauma at the same time.
Yeah. So. Chris.
So I like the Deus Ex games. Mm. I think that's the big one. Akira!
Akira!
Akira! You can't say it without kind of shouting it.
You have the weird music in the background.
And I love Transmetropolitan.
Yeah, talk to us a little bit about Transmet, because it's very kind of important to the influence of your character.
Yeah, that's right. So it features a Hunter S. Thompson character, a gonzo journalist.
It's a set of comic books.
Yeah, it's a set of comic books. Firstly, it's a set of comic books, and it features a man named Spider Jerusalem, who's based on Hunter S. Thompson, who's a interviewer and a article writer.
A gonzo journalist.
A gonzo journalist.
Yeah.
It's about power. It's set in the, I can't remember what year it's set in, but I think further than the cyberpunk setting. Mm. It's quite far into the future, but it's kind of post, or in some areas, post-morality. So like Long Pig is like freely available on the streets. You just like grab a stick of human feet.
Human meat.
Yeah, and just start eating.
Nom, nom, nom.
Some people might not be familiar with the term long pig.
That's right, long pig. That's right.
Too right.
And fair enough. For me, cyberpunk, the themes that really interest me are about government control, about kind of widespread conspiracies, paranoia, and a unequal status system.
Cool.
Those are the big things about shaking up the system and that system being an oppressive, dehumanizing, kind of washing you gray.
One thing I really like about those comic books, the Transmetropolitan comic books, is not only the great character stuff that's in them. Spider's a brilliant character, but there's some really detailed panels that just show off the world.
Mm.
The crazy crowds, like the thick with all kinds of different people sprouting all kinds of different kind of modifications. And then the detail on the streets, the rubbish piled up, the graffiti, the squalor is really like brought to life, and it's really punchy in that comic book. Mm.
There's a great part in it where a gang is roving around and they're reading people's genetic code and they're beating people up for what they think are like
impurities
basically.
Wow.
So it's like people are still trash. They're just using technology to be trash.
Yeah,
you know, like they're still exactly.
To
define their trash. So it's more racist, you know.
Yes.
It's about your genetic code.
Yeah.
Moving on. Racism. Sean.
Rife for comedy.
Sean, what about you and your relationship to cyberpunk?
It's interesting. We have a very estranged relationship. Or more so, I don't.
You don't speak to each other anymore.
You dated once. It was a bit ugly.
Look, we tested the waters. It didn't work out.
Yeah.
I don't really have much of a history with cyberpunk. Mm. That's actually probably what excites me the most. Like, I am a sci-fi boy. But other than that, like, I know you're more on the kind of hard sci-fi. We talked about this.
Yeah, definitely.
Whereas my history is more in kind of more the popcorn-y kind of sci-fi. Mm. But
space opera and fantasy sci-fi.
I like me some Star Wars. I like me some Firefly.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think the most recent thing is more on a generalized scale, I've been pushing for a D&D campaign for ages on this podcast, and rightfully so. You're like, no. and then when you thought, okay, what about cyberpunk? And I started looking at the gameplay trailers for the 2077 that's coming out, and I thought, well, fuck, this is rad.
Yeah.
It's such a great world.
I got so jazzed on those trailers, I gotta say. Like, I understand why people are already cosplaying and just like, it's the same thing we were talking about with you know, Transmetropolitan and Blade Runner and Ghost in the Machine. It's just like people fall in love with this world.
Mm.
Even though it's not something that it's not nice.
No.
But people just love to imagine like the detail and get really in there with their nails. It's fun.
It's juicy. It's crunchy. Do you have any other, like, have you played Deus Ex or anything like that?
No, that's the thing. I haven't actually played a lot of cyberpunk video games. I haven't consumed a lot of media. You were the one that introduced me to Akira.
We had a little showing when we were talking
Akira.
About that.
So, like, I'm a baby when it comes to this, and that's more what excites me. I think what does kind of get me going for this game, especially and Cyberpunk in general, is that kind of feeling of everything's in the now and everything's immediate. There is not really much of a tie to the nostalgic looking back or making too many future plans, because you can't think long term in this in this life. So it's just kind of about, it's not me.
The world is
it's
now.
Not me at all. I'm very much not that person.
Especially these characters, right? The people who are at the heart of 2020, the role-playing game, are punks. That's where the original kind of name comes from. Mm. These guys who are punks, who are edge runners, they're called, who don't have a lot of future unless they carve one out.
Yeah.
Whereas we now think of Cyberpunk as more applied to the world, is as the setting. But I think it's worth thinking about keeping focused on the people in that world.
Yeah.
And being able to become them and think in that. Way with it. They're close to the
100%.
Keep the punk in cyberpunk, man.
Yeah.
And the other thing as well is that I've just always loved it, especially in the 80s when there was an imagining of what 30 years in the future was going to look
like.
Yeah,
fantastic.
Like 2020's next year.
I was watching Escape from New York about halfway through it recently, and I think it's set like 1994 or something.
Good on them.
Yeah.
It's like you see the title card and it says like 1994 now, and you're like,
Yes,
Kurt Russell.
There's one thing I do love about Cyberpunk, and it's the stuff that's inched into our world now.
Yeah.
And a lot of, because the influences that they took to make the world were already there, like in their nascent stages. But like, because a lot of things are borrowed from, Japanese, Korean culture, Chinese culture, especially because China is such a huge conglomerate.
I think globalism as well is something that they predicted in a way that not many other media did.
And when I think a lot about how the world, like, and people in China have to deal with smog all the time, so those face masks, it's a daily thing. And you know, the characters in Cyberpunk, they have to deal with acid rain, it's on the forecast. It's like, oh, man, I gotta bring my car
acid
in.
Acid rain again.
I think one thing that's interesting, just to quickly finish on the setting and the world and Cyberpunk in general, I think one thing that didn't kind of turn out how they imagined is the gang culture. Mm. Gangs are such a huge part of Cyberpunk, both this version of it and many iterations of Cyberpunk media. And in our world, like, these street gangs and things that were such a big part of 80s and 80s culture and 80s movies have actually kind of gone away to a degree. I think that's grown from like more militarized policing styles, which is something that's happened even here in Australia.
There
I
are
would say.
Things as like funded gangs as well.
Sure.
Like, you know, a lot of governments getting into bed with bikie gangs and sort of going, okay, here's... We don't like you, but here's ways that we police you at the same time and give you certain liberties. So it's kind of like, you know, you stay to your territory, we stay to ours.
Bit scary.
Yikes.
Yeah. But I think that's something that's really fun about this particular world is that the gangs are pushed to they're dialed up to 11, they're crazy, they're weird, and they're everywhere.
Yeah.
They rule the night, they've got a whole section of the city that's basically given over to them. And
they got wacky themes.
Yeah, it gives them a real kind of danger to them. I like it. So moving on to role-playing, I think it's kind of interesting for audience to find out what our history with role-playing is and where we come from. Me personally, I didn't get into tabletop RPGs until I was a full-blown adult.
This is news to me.
2022.
Really?
Yeah. Wow. So I really had heard about lots about D&D growing up, and I really wanted to try some. And I started to meet some people I was over here in Australia who were into it. My very first game, I think I joined a group at a local card shop, like a trading card shop, and it was awful.
Was it good for you at the time? Did you
think? I mean, I could see that it was terrible.
Oh, right.
It was mainly in the way the DM ran it from the book. It was the goblin moves two squares and throws a potion at you. And it was very boring.
Huh.
And I was like, I could give this way more flavor. I could make the goblin snarl at you nastily as he pops out behind a rock and hurls a potion through the air.
Mm.
Its noxious smell growing as it closes in on you. Right. And I was like, wow, I could do this. I could tell this story in a way that's way better. So for me, it was a real revelation to have someone do it badly because it inspired me to do it well. Yeah.
That's exactly why I got the thoughts about doing Baby Beard in the first place, listening to podcasts and going, I can do this better.
Since then, I've played a whole bunch of games from the White Wolf series, Mage, a little bit of Changeling and Vampire, played some of the wilder games like Exalted, which is all about being demigods in an anime universe.
Jesus Christ, that sounds awesome.
It's an interesting game.
I think it's burdened down by too many rules.
Right.
So it's a little hard to, it's a little esoteric to get into. And the lore is like a giant.
It's a big tome.
Mm. Yeah. It's crazy. But it's kind of notable for its ambition, I would say. I've played some D&D, had lots of fun with that. And probably my favorite game to run before this is a game called Dark Heresy, which is based on Warhammer 40K. Mm. Chris has actually been in a game I've ran for that, Dark Heresy. And we had a lot of fun. Mm. So I just love being part of collaborative storytelling.
Yeah.
I think it's almost like a lost art. Mm. I like to imagine, this may be completely wrong, that way back when people would sit around fires and make up stories and the chip in different parts of it. Mm. Maybe you just had one guy who knew all the stories who would come to the pub and tell you all the stories in a long sequence. But I think maybe people just made up shit together.
I don't think you're wrong.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, you even see that in just maybe we don't have a big round the campfire storytelling culture as such. But you get that, you know, I've heard so many stories. I was there at the first iteration of it. Something as simple as this happened to me today. And I have heard that retold, and everyone puts their own spin on it. It becomes this Chinese whispers game of our own everyday folklore, basically. Like that, and that's how it started. This was the story of what happened to this person on that day. And it just gets like, you know, spun and everyone chips in and adds their own thing to it, which I think is, you know, magical.
Yeah. Well, do you want to segue into like what your experience with role-playing games is?
Oh man, none.
That's cool. It's really nice to have fresh players.
I mean, I'm not fresh. I'm doing little, I think my first ever role-playing is D&D, have a campaign. It's 5th edition. And I've just kind of started with a character who is super dumb. She's obsessed with kind of like getting paid, getting sexed, and that's about it. She's very surface level, so I thought that was a great jumping in point. Like, some characters don't have a dark backstory. Sometimes they're just there because they're bored, and this is the only way for them to, you know, have a little bit of meaning in their life. That's pretty much it for me. I'm an actor. I think we've all got performing background in some way or another. And so I thought, it's the same as what we've been saying. Seen a lot of content and went, what could I add to this? You know, have people been approaching this from an acting background? Not that you need it, but maybe it would add something else, you know?
Sure.
And I think there's something nice just about really getting your teeth in and kind of, you know.
I think a lot of what people struggle with often when they're first starting role playing is stepping into character.
Oh, definitely,
and speaking in character can be extremely daunting. And can be a little bit awkward for people sometimes, especially if they're playing a character that's wildly different from themselves.
And so
strong archetypes like you were talking about are like, if you're listening to this, you haven't played role-playing game before and you are thinking about it, go for strong archetypes, something you know, something that has simple motivations.
Yep.
It's not a cop-out and it's a great way to get started.
Because my character's really dumb, I can just really fall back on that and be like, I don't know.
Chris...
So if you've been only playing role-playing games, Phil, since in your 20s, that means I've been playing role-playing games longer than you, which is news to me.
Chris outranks you.
That's right.
Do you want my chair? No,
please, no.
Senior Chris.
You put in so much work. I couldn't imagine. The amount of work you've put in is amazing already. But no, I've been playing role-playing games since I was 8.
Far out.
So my cousin's bought a copy of Baldur's Gate, the isometric role-playing game for PC, and played it. And then we went, oh, there's a system under this, and stripped second edition D&D from the video game into pen and paper, and then cross-pollinated that. We took it to school and we cross-pollinated it with, do you guys remember like the series of books, the Redwall books?
Yes.
Yeah.
About
yeah.
knights and animals and stuff?
Yeah.
So we turned that into a role-playing game.
Cool.
Did you not like, have the internet or something?
No. No.
What?
No, we did not. This was the late 90s in Australia.
Yeah.
In like just in the country, basically.
Yeah.
I see
so
now
we,
the route.
So we stripped out the Baldur's Gate system and turned it into a pen and paper game. And then from there, I've gone through second edition. We actually managed to get the books for second edition. We went back to first edition. We did 3.5, fourth edition, Dark Heresy. And then I've been LARPing and running a national LARP. I ran it for about a year, but I ran
and
a
what
local
is LARPing for what people
live
don't
action
know?
Role play. It's where you walk and talk as your characters. You don't just describe the action around a table.
Adelaide actually had a very large, long running Vampire the Masquerade LARP.
Yes, we did.
Called City of Churches.
City of Churches. I wasn't part of that one. I came into a game after that one.
Yeah.
But I ran that chapter, a chapter of that here, for about 3 years. So I've been role playing for too long.
This is my swan song. I'm retiring. Checking out. This.
It's been a great career of role playing. I've made no money in it at all.
Can you tell us a little bit about your experience DMing and how you that alters your perspective on playing, or what you've kind of learnt playing, what it's brought to your life?
Yeah. So I think for me the kind of golden rule of role-playing games is the book informs the play style and the players inform the play style as well.
Yep.
So like for people who know, like 4th edition Dungeons & Dragons has like a very kind of like square by square, inch by inch battle strategy kind of combat system to it. So you can't kind of play a cyberpunky sort of style to that. Like it informs a play style.
Yeah.
Like similarly, like I don't think it's very like cool to do that with a loosey-goosey kind of game where, you know, you're like counting inches and stuff like that in a game that's being largely described in people's imagination. So like for me, role-playing games have kind of made this wonderful thing where I'm like, okay, what do people want to talk about? What do people want to make? And what's the best way to do it? Like how do we collaboratively come together and make a cool thing?
It's a really good point because the gameplay is not there for nothing. Like everything informs the story, or tries to anyway, inform the story. It's the same as video games. They don't, you know, if you're in a horror game and they haven't given you any weapons and it's very kind of stealth and hide, they've done that for a specific reason.
Yeah, and it informs the way you approach
exactly.
and play
that's
the
right.
game.
Yeah. Game design, basically. Yeah. Like simple game design, like well, the system informs the story. Because it does.
I think that's what some people miss a little bit. More tips for novice role players, I guess, is that the numbers and the dice are there to inform the story being told. They are not the story itself.
Yeah,
the game is not the mechanics.
Because I'm bad with math. I've literally rolled something and just had to like
stare at it.
Stare at it for at least 20 seconds before the DM comes over to me.
Excuse me, what number is that?
Looks at the numbers, does the math for me, and goes, yeah, you did good. That thing you wanted to do, you did it.
You
I'm
did
like,
it.
Oh, great.
So yeah, don't let the numbers get in your way. Yeah. There are means to
Never.
An end.
That's right.
I think 10 plus 10 is 20. Yes, yeah. You got it.
I don't even, it doesn't even get in my way at all. I just brush past it.
It just slides right past you. What about you, Sean?
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of the same answer, isn't it, from before. I've got... Very
20 years
minimal.
Experience.
Yeah, absolutely. I am 45.
Got great skin.
First got introduced to even just the idea of like the D&D in that world. I used to play Baldur's Gate Dark Alliance for the PS2, which was this, for my money, was an amazing game. And I really wanted this to get my two brothers and play it as a four player and love the idea of leveling up and going to the dungeons and seeing the dragons and the monsters. And I thought, oh, this is a really cool concept. Having no idea that it stems from a tabletop system. Like the idea of role-playing just didn't compute in my 10-year-old brain. And then, you know, movies would come up. I mean, more recently you see Stranger Things has kind of put
it's
it back
in
kind of the public mindset now. Is going, oh, that's right. It's a thing. It's kind of, and I don't know whether that's moved the needle in bringing it back or not from a mainstream perspective. But over the past couple of years, I think, so all of us went to the same acting school And I believe my first foray into D&D in general was with a game with you, Chris.
Was that your first game?
Yeah.
100%. Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. There you go.
Yeah.
Yeah, running a D&D game with a bunch of actors is one of the most interesting experiences. Like I've played with actors, but I've never played a game entirely with actors.
Yes.
It's a time. And that was your first time.
Yeah, so I've now, up until this point, I've played D&D on 3 separate occasions, and we only did 1 session, and we all never returned. So
wow.
I've started 3 different stories and never gotten past the first session. It's like if we did today and then just never returned.
We just broke for lunch and then just never.
I'd be like, yeah, that's how D&D works. That's how role playing works in general.
Just roll a character, do their intro, and then walk away and never have a resolution.
That is awful because doing all the rolling and sorting out your character is the most tedious.
Takes time.
Some people freaking love it.
Really?
Some people just make endless characters.
I do
never
too.
Get rolled,
I've really adored the character making process and actually, you know, bogging down. Like, it's so hard to start, but then as soon as you get that one idea, you roll that thing, that kind of snowballs, and it's...
What a lovely segue, Sean. Can you tell us about your character and the concept for them and how you came up with it?
Yeah, sure. So although I haven't had much of a knowledge in the area, I do love the idea of noir. And I love the idea of the noir. Hello, Nicolas Cage. So I was looking through a lot of these characters. I thought, the fixer, you know, I don't want to be like a big barbaric brute. I don't really want to be the combat heavy guy, but I'm not intelligent enough to be a net runner or a techie or things that require just a lot of techie fandangling. And I thought, the idea of a fixer really appeals to me. Someone that lives in the shadows and gets to just be a bit more anonymous and autonomous in what he does.
So for those listening who are not like fully versed in cyberpunk lore, a fixer is...
Yeah, so a fixer is one of the 9 different play types you can be. And a fixer is a person that gets things done. Basically, if you need something found, if you've got information that you need to draw out or buy or sell or need to find someone, you need to do a thing, a fixer is the person you can go to. Fixer is the guy on the ground or the person on the ground that just... knows where everything is, how to get things done, and can get you things.
Yeah, I mean, more recently in the news, you had Michael Cohen was Trump's fixer. So it is a popular parlance as well. So that might be a little route in for people, I guess.
Yeah.
So Junk in particular.
So Junk, I kind of put him in under this idea that information is the root of all power for a person like Junk. He understands that it's not how much you own. It's not who you know necessarily. It's not, you know, your wealth or even sex or anything like that. Or the biggest gun, it's what you know and it's how you can use that.
So your character grew out of the philosophy and the worldview kind of first.
Yeah,
and then the details coalesced.
Absolutely.
Around that.
It's like when I was thinking about the idea of a fix, I wanted to have like kind of a almost like a mantra or a motto that kind of roots the character and how they operate and like what drives them. Mm. And that was it. It's information and how information can be utilized and how it can be used as a weapon for good or for ill.
And does Junk have a little affectation, worldview, anything you'd like to kind of share that's a particular like detail about the character you've made that you really want to highlight?
Yeah, so Mr. Junk, as far as anyone knows, popped up onto the scene 2 years ago. He came as a grunt, but you know, Junk is just, it's kind of like Cher. There is no last name, it's just Junk.
Where I thought you were going with that.
Yeah, Junk, just think Cher and you've got Junk.
Yeah, okay, right.
No, he literally only popped up into people's conscious minds 2 years ago. No
so
one knows where he was before that.
An unknown quantity.
Yes.
I know that when we were developing some early concepts, mystery and having something to be discovered or hidden from other players.
That's
is the
hook
really
that I really love. It's for me, it's always about like, you know, the story, funnily enough. I know we did a D&D game a while ago where I was saying to Chris, who was DMing at the time, I said, can we do it where not everyone just meets at the same time? Can we, you know, spend an hour or 2 hours just meeting all the other characters and seeing how the story weaves them all together rather than just you meet in a tavern.
Yeah, that's right.
That sort of stuff, really. For me, whether it's video games or tabletop, I love the world building aspect. That's cool. What really gets me going.
And having a bit of mystery is a really good hook into that.
100%.
Cool. So listeners, look out for, see if you can figure out what's going on with Junk as we get into the game. and what little things he might be hiding. It'd be a fun thing to follow along. Chris.
Uncle Bob. Yeah, Uncle Bob. So I don't want to give too much away for listeners who have read the Transmetropolitan comics. It might gallop away, and the archetype that I'm playing might run away from you. So yeah. It might spoil a bit. So I won't say too much about him.
Okay.
Other than to say that Uncle Bob is a radio DJ. He runs a morning breakfast show called Wake Up Night City.
And that's at Byte Radio, which is like a pirate radio station.
Yes,
which it's we've created for this for the show.
That's right. He's an eccentric sort of man, often whacked out on some nasty chemicals, drugs. I don't know why I did it in that voice.
Drugs.
Yeah, you can say the word drugs.
Drugs.
That's okay.
Yeah, that's right. No, we'll get iTunes will demonetized. Yeah. he's an eccentric sort of fellow. Wearing a what does he wear? It's a green overall. It's a lime green jumpsuit.
Yeah,
with fantastic
pink overalls.
Yeah,
And then a bright yellow fanny pack.
He looks like a bit like Mario.
I was gonna say a crazy
acid.
Mario.
Yes. Yeah, he looks like a very early 90s.
It's
like
very confusing the picture you've just painted for me.
He's a confusing man.
Because you have
green jumpsuit, pink overalls,
and overalls over a jumpsuit.
Yeah,
yes, with a yellow fanny pack.
Wild.
Yeah, right.
This is
with a
future.
Yellow fanny pack.
But isn't that kind of what Mario looks like? He's got a full red, like,
because it's not a shirt.
It's not Mario's a shirt. Wearing. No, it goes the whole.
Don't know why we're talking about Mario.
Yeah. with the overalls over top. It's perfectly normal.
Yeah,
everyone dresses like Mario. What's
that's
wrong?
Right. he's a strung out drug user who runs a radio station, a radio morning show.
Cool.
Let's
talk about Cassie Glass.
So she's a rocker ever since 16. She's kind of been bouncing around trying to make music. Not a good childhood there.
I thought you were going to say not good music.
No. she's played with reinventing herself a lot. She's got a bit of a personality crisis, but it's also a way that she feels like she can protect herself. I was really, just inspired by a lot of the 80s, we had this big thing of subcultures going on. Mm. You know, you had the prep and the, you know, very stylized commercial.
Breakfast Club, right? You look at all the five people in or six people in Breakfast Club, however many it is, and they're all youth archetypes, aren't they? Right? They all represent a subculture.
And look, basically what I did is I saw Jem and the Holograms. I realized later after I made the character, I was like, that's Jem and the Holograms. Like, she's got this tech and she's able to reinvent herself to try and keep herself safe. So, you know, we've got the real kind of Cass. She's got a bit more bite to her. She's a bit more punk at heart, but then she has the ability to go high gloss, high pop, corporate owned. So I think she's constantly walking a line of, being true to herself and being true to the scene at the same time of playing a part in a bigger picture.
Well, I think it's worth quickly mentioning that rockers in Cyberpunk 2020 have a bit more of a active social role than maybe musicians of today, or even of the 80s. I think they've taken what kind of 80s musicians were about and again try to dial it up and say, actually, musicians are the heart of a counterculture.
Yeah.
They command a following to have like a fanatic degree where they can actually get those followers to do crazy things
and to feel things as well in this world where, you know, it's grim. There's not a lot left. Sean, you talked about having a key phrase. I think Cassie has a phrase that is basically, I can save the world. It's not true. She can't save the world, but what
she might not even be able to save Night City.
No,
do you know what
but
I mean?
What she does when she's on stage, she feels like she's saving the
world.
Saving the lives of the people who are there, even if it's just in that song, just for a moment. She's like, we can do things. We can feel things. They may own our bodies, but they don't own us, if that makes sense. There's more.
It's interesting.
More
like, you know, what does it take to make people to care in this world? Care enough to, you know, incite revolution.
Yeah.
That's right. There is, to kind of wrap it in a nice kind of bow, there is a really lovely thread of revolution and imminent change mm-hmm. that exists in 2020. Some of the supplementary materials really try and push referees towards like, hey, these guys are the start of a movement. They're start of some change. They want to see the world as it is alter for the better in their favor. And I think it's fun to kind of run around in the cyberpunk world and maybe be a trauma team or whatever and do your job. But there's also an even bigger satisfaction, I think, in starting to maybe try and wrestle back the reins of the world and look at a slightly kind of bigger picture, which I think is a great thing to have a rock in your group to have that ambition. Is there anything else anyone else wants to say about themselves, what to look out for in the game or cyberpunk in general?
I don't know if I'm preempting what you're going to say, but do we want to give listeners an insight into what going mainstream is going to be?
Sure. Without giving too much away, because you can just jump
listen
in
to it,
and
please.
Listen to the story. Please do. Going mainstream is about a bit of a heist or prank on one of those
dastardly corporations.
Dastardly corporations. I don't want to give away too much more than that.
I think that's the hook that we need. Just a heist gets people.
Yeah,
everyone loves a good heist.
Should be should be nice and tense and should build to a nice head. So
we're gonna wreck some shit. We're gonna destroy some status quo. We're gonna fuck the system, man.
Okay, yeah. Uncle Bob. Right. Uncle Bob,
beautiful
calm down.
Music.
Uncle Bob's ready. He's king.
So I hope you enjoy Cyberpunk 2020 going mainstream. We've been Baby Beard. I'm Phil.
I'm Ellen.
I'm Chris.
And I'm Sean.
We'll catch you around. Find all of the episodes for Cyberpunk and all of our other podcasts on Spreaker, iTunes, SoundCloud, and any other podcatcher. If you like what we do, please rate and review us.
We'll see you in Night City, Chumbas.
Bye. I've got a...
Bye.
Bye. You have been listening to Going Mainstream, which is a Roll to Cast production. The best way to find us is on Twitter, Discord, and our Patreon. All our podcasts are on Acast, Spotify, YouTube, and all good podcatchers. You can support us on Patreon at patreon.com/RollToCast. Cyberpunk 2020 and all associated properties are trademark of R. Telsorian Games. Used with permission.